Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. How IKEA Stays Ahead. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is May the 9th. Today, we are on day two of our article on IKEA, and we talk about IKEA's new CEO. He's from Spain, and we talk about some of his plans for the company and how IKEA has been able to maintain, even though last year in 2025, their sales was mostly flat. There wasn't huge growth, but they've managed to...
Their revenue was mostly flat.
They didn't have huge revenue spike. They still managed to hold it together even in a fast-changing and difficult situation globally with the economy. And I'd like to invite Simon. He's the one whispering, reminding me it's mostly flat revenue. Simon, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. We're actually going to talk about that today when they explain what happened financially.
Yes.
Because their sales were up, but the amount of money that was coming in from all of those sales was slightly down.
Slightly down.
Revenue is like the amount of money, not the number of things you're selling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Simon, before we go on, I want to talk about the concept of resilience, because this is a term that was touched on yesterday. We didn't have time to go dive into it, but we talked about this CEO in yesterday's reading. He says he wants to double down on the resilience of the company. Now, Simon, what is resilience in your definition, and how does a person or a company build resilience?
I think the way I would describe resilience is I would say it is a toughness that allows you to survive and overcome all of the various types of difficulty that come your way. So if you're talking about an individual, it's, you know, we might describe them as the storms of life, illness, the loss of loved ones, broken hearts, unemployment, all of the problems people have.
Yes.
If you're talking about a company, it's more economic issues like increased taxes and competition and tariffs and, you know, I don't know, getting kicked out of countries and whatever happens to your business, all of these difficulties. So if you're resilient, it means you're tough and able to overcome those problems and survive. And more than just survive, you're able to thrive or do well despite those situations.
Yes, you're able to survive and thrive. Now, Simon, that's exactly, I think your definition of resilience was really well put. And this is what we want to touch upon. So this CEO, this new CEO incoming, he is talking about, today we'll be talking about some of the ways that he's trying to build resilience in IKEA so that IKEA will not just survive, but it will thrive. And of course, it will continue to grow. Because yesterday we said one of his priorities is growth. He wants to grow in all the different markets they are in, whether they're older markets, mature markets, or newer emerging markets. He wants growth. On that note, let's get into our first reading for today. We'll first talk about what caused the lower revenue in IKEA in the past year.
What caused the lower revenue? We are selling more quantities at a lower price. We measure performance in four dimensions. One is financial. The other three are the climate dimension, better planet for all, the social dimension, better life for people, and the consumer dimension, better homes for the customer. What's happening is exactly what we wanted to happen because our physical visitation is growing. Our online visitation is growing, and our sold quantities are growing. So basically, revenue is down because we have kept low prices. But we are very happy about the underlying business. For us, growth is not a mechanism to pay more dividends to the shareholder because we are owned by a foundation. So 85% of the profit remains in the company. and 15% is the dividend to support charitable activities.
Simon, we start today's portion by talking about, let's talk about their sales. So last year, their quantity was good. The number of items they sold was actually good. They said, here it says, we are selling more quantities at a lower price.
Yeah.
But they're selling more, but the thing is, they're selling at a lower price.
Yeah. So they're earning less.
They might, they could be earning less. And then it goes on next to say, talk about they measure performance in four dimensions. And so when we use the word dimension, we just means that they're measuring something from four different angles, four different angles or four different things that you're measuring.
It's kind of like if you're doing something in school and you're being graded on four different things.
Yes.
Like your academic performance, your style, your whatever.
Simon, it makes me think of the speech contest.
Yeah.
Like, for example, many of us as teachers here at Studio Classroom, we've had to go judge speech contest at some point of our career, right?
Yeah.
And then when you had a speech contest, there are always different things we're judging them for, right?
It's always like 40% content.
Yes.
40%
presentation style.
Accuracy and fluency.
Yes. And then pronunciation.
10% pronunciation.
Then like visual or presentation style.
Yeah. Yes, dimensions. All dimensions.
Dimensions.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, as judges, it's always a little difficult to, sometimes the contestants can be, there's not that big of a difference.
Frankly, sometimes it's hard to know what the dimension is talking about.
Exactly.
You know, like if you're doing content, and yet they've been given the topic of the speech, so they're all giving the same speech.
Yes,
like,
why is
English important in a modern world,
right?
You know? And then you have 55 people give the same speech about that.
Yeah. And it all sounds pretty much the same after you
listen
to.
You got to give them all perfect.
10,
yeah.
After 10.
Yeah.
Yes, that is the life of an English teacher, dear friends. Well, let's start with the dimensions. Okay, the first one we all understand, it's financial.
Money.
And they have three other dimensions. Simon, let's talk about the other three.
So I guess the first of the other three, which would be number two that's listed here, is the climate dimension. And they describe that in parentheses, little brackets, as being better planet for all. And then they say the social dimension, better life for people, and the consumer dimension, better homes for the customer. Now, I'll be honest. Just like in an English speech contest, not all of those are super clear to me what exactly they're talking about. I mean, the environmental one,
That's pretty clear. Environmental one. Like, IKEA has been known to, it's always practice a focus on sustainability.
Yeah.
Like recycling, also using less packaging. For example, like when you go buy IKEA products, there's not a lot of box. Like, they try to keep it very minimal. Right?
I think it would
packaging.
Be pretty open to debate, though,
right.
A lot of that, because, IKEA furniture, I would say at least in the West, is famous for not lasting very long and being thrown out,
That's true,
on the curbside. So I suppose, though.
But they're talking about they're trying to use, for example, perhaps materials that are not so harmful to the environment.
Well, what I would say is in their defense, they are using pine.
Yes.
And people who are not from countries that have large logging industries won't necessarily understand the difference. But pine grows
so
very
fast.
Quickly.
So fast.
So we chop it down and then we hire a bunch of college students to go out and replant those forests. And 10 years later, we come back and chop it all down again and then replant it. So there is sort of a sustainability to using pine.
Yes.
That isn't true. Like if you use a wood like teak, for example.
Yes.
I mean, you got to let that thing grow for 100 years,
Right.
So pine is not like that. So it's kind of a more environmentally friendly. And I suppose they're focusing on things like recycling.
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, I'm sure they have a lot of the environmental targets, like, for example, net zero zero carbon. I mean, I'm sure these are all goals for IKEA and how to be more sustainable in their business. So in my mind, IKEA gives an image of loving the environment. That's one of their core values. And so the climate dimension for us makes sense. And then social dimension, this one is a little more...
This one I don't understand.
Up in the air, better life for people, I guess.
Well, it doesn't seem any different than the consumer dimension to me.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure exactly the social and the consumer, like better home for the customer. Isn't better life for people also home for the consumer?
We're really just guessing here, you know? But I would say the social dimension would be things like you're building furniture that allows people to gather together to socially interact, maybe.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
And then also the social dimension can also be, for example, ESG metrics. Like these days, big companies, many companies, we have to care about ESG. And that's kind of like your face to the world. E is environment. S is social. G is governance. And here on the social, we can also be talking about how are we better to our communities, right? Mm. How do we treat our communities better? And then perhaps even do we treat our own employees better? Are we giving our employees a better life? Better life for people, I guess, could also include your employees. So the other two dimensions, we're not quite sure, but these are the four dimensions that IKEA says is important.
Now to be clear though, yes. Rebecca, I am pretty sure that someone from IKEA could tell you very clearly what these four mean.
Yes.
It's just this article does not describe very clearly what these are. I don't think it's just sort of like a random thing IKEA is saying.
No. I'm sure there are people
It's not the focus of our article.
Yeah, but we didn't do extra deep dives into this, so we're not quite sure, but this is all dimensions they care about. But let's continue talking. And then I want to go on to, in the next paragraph, we talk about growth. Here it says, because IKEA, like we mentioned in the beginning, is actually not a public company, or IKEA's parent company, the Inca Group. They're not a publicly listed company, right? They're a private company. And here it says, here we'll talk about it in a little more detail. It's not even a company. They're owned by a foundation.
Mm.
And then so here it says, growth is not a mechanism to pay more dividends to the shareholders. Simon, most public companies that are listed on the stock markets, one of the most important things is always, how do I get more dividends to my shareholders, right?
Yeah. Well, or value.
Yeah. And
value
dividends
of some
is just basically what, the payment that you give your shareholders, right?
Sure.
The amount of dividends that you give each quarter or each year to your shareholders. So how does IKEA's structure work?
I don't really know. Presumably, the foundation is making money and then using that money to do something
charitable. It says 85% of the profit stays in the company. And then 15% of the dividend is to support charitable activities.
Yeah.
But we're not exactly sure what that includes.
So that's to do the something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
probably something environmental, social, and consumer oriented.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. Based on their dimensions.
Based on their dimension, maybe planting more trees, right?
Yeah, sure.
That could be a dimension. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in their eyes, growth is not just talking about growing the dividends to the shareholders. And then, of course, dividend is that part of the company's profit that you give to your shareholders. Mm-hmm. According to how many shares you have, then how much dividend you get.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's talking about dividends.
It's like a payment that they make once a month or once a quarter.
Yes.
They give you a share of the profits. I mean, the other way they do it is they keep it and then the value of your stock increases.
Yes.
Because the company is more valuable.
Yes. So I guess...
Ideally. Or they could just lose money and then the shareholders lose money too.
That's true. But in IKEA's...
But nobody likes that.
Yes. But in IKEA's case... IKEA is not a publicly listed company, so it doesn't have the pressure of having to appease its shareholders because it's not publicly listed. And sometimes that is a benefit too, right? Because when you're a public listed company, then you do have to listen to your shareholders' opinions and, their input is really important. Well, friends, let's get into our next reading where we'll talk about some of IKEA's goals and what are some ways they keep the shoppers continuing to come to their physical stores? Let's get into our next reading.
what keeps shoppers coming? People still have the need to go out. That's why it's important that we call it a meeting place, not necessarily a shopping center. It's a way to connect with the communities, to create traffic with engagement and food and events. What is really important is that the visitor still finds good value. That's why we don't have too much discount activity on Black Friday. We are trying to have everyday low prices. That's why we keep investing in that. So you offer a fun day out in the IKEA store and you keep prices low. The cost of housing is increasing all over the world. So our care vision, better life at home by providing more affordable home furnishings, is even more relevant today. What are the challenges of being global? Companies who operate globally are living in a more complex world, in a more volatile world, sometimes because of tariffs, sometimes because of currencies, sometimes because of the limitation in global trade or geopolitics. But we need to learn as a company, how can we build the resilience to keep navigating the circumstances? That's why we distinguish what is the short term and the long term. For us, the long term is to build the resilience that can keep us in the low price agenda.
Simon, we get into our second reading here. And then what is people's needs? Like, no matter what is the state of the economy, people have a need to do what?
They say here, go out. I mean, that's kind of interesting for a store to. I mean, what it basically means is IKEA is trying to turn itself into like a tourist destination.
It's a meeting place.
Like a place you go for fun.
Yes. Yeah, it's right? A meeting place.
Like a park.
Yes.
Or a museum or a library. You know, I don't know.
They basically see themselves as a meeting place for people to hang out and spend time together, right? So they call themselves, like, we call it a meeting place. So it's mm-hmm. not just shopping. We want you to hang out in our place, mm-hmm. and we want you to spend lots of time. And, you know, this is their way of connecting with communities. And then, of course, I think that the next line is really important, to create traffic. To create traffic just means you want a lot of people in your store. You want mm-hmm. high foot traffic, because if a lot of people visit your store, then the chance of them buying stuff is very high. Like, for example, if I meet Simon for lunch at IKEA, it's very likely I won't just eat lunch there. I'll probably eat lunch and then shop around, right? So
yeah.
They want to have more people go to IKEA. So now they're kind of like repositioning IKEA, not just a shopping place, but a shopping plus meeting place.
I mean, it's interesting they say that. I don't know. Have you been to an IKEA?
Yeah.
Okay. So I could have a totally different opinion on this than you, but for me, IKEA is a place to mostly be avoided.
Well, like, I think
you don't want to have to go there.
There's too many people there.
Yeah, you don't want to have to
too many people.
Like, go there to pick up one thing.
Right.
Because once you're in that store, it's like an hour and a half till you find your way out.
Well, it's
like those
so
things
big.
Are like mazes.
Yes.
And they got you winding around the same floor with no escape.
Yes.
And there's people, you know, parked and everywhere lying. It is not at all a convenient experience. So like you can't drop by, like you could drop by a 7-Eleven to pick up something you need. Like you kind of have to take like an entire Saturday afternoon to go to an IKEA.
Yeah, that's really valid. And then when I think of meeting place, for me, meeting place is often around food. And I love IKEA Swedish meatballs. Their ice cream is good too, but it's just a lot of people. Like
yeah.
in the IKEA restaurant, like sometimes I just like forget the restaurant. It's just too many people.
Yeah.
And I think if they really want this to make this a very happy meeting place, then they really got to expand their sit-down options, including that restaurant. Maybe make that restaurant double
its size.
Well,
see, even
that,
yeah,
cafe.
Like there's never enough seating, you know, in the restaurants. It's like people are, you know, yeah. IKEA is not a pleasant shopping experience for me.
Just
though
too many
I do
people.
Like, you know, you might yeah. like the IKEA stuff
yeah.
and want to go through.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know if you noticed this yesterday with the statistics. The online sales are up.
Well, it makes sense because
maybe
people
that's
are shopping
why. Yeah.
online more, you know, like
yeah.
we're doing
well,
a lot
or
more.
Or maybe they're trying to avoid the actual store.
It's very possible.
They want the stuff, but not the store. Could
and
be.
Then, And then our next part, I want to talk about good value. And what does that mean? They don't just offer discounts on Black Friday. They want everyday low prices. That's another slogan of another.
They have done that very well.
Yes, they have done that very well. You don't have to go at a specific time because the prices are pretty solid. They're always the same price.
And they're big enough to have like a full selection in each department. Like if you're looking for some sort of kitchen tool, they have it, right? So you kind of know you can get it and you can get it affordably.
Yeah.
The only thing is, they've done that very well.
How do we shop in a way that doesn't make Simon tired?
Well, just how do you find in that store? Like you're wandering around beds for half an hour trying to find the kitchen tools.
So Simon, that's why we use their website to shop.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like we're talking about that. Like that's why online sales are going up.
I mean, there are a lot of shortcuts built in.
Right.
Like there's doors that allow you to slip from the bed section through to the toys or whatever. But
okay, and IKEA is mine. They want you to have a fun day out in the IKEA store. So they do hope that you still visit their physical store. And then meanwhile, they're doing their best to keep their prices low.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here they go on to say the cost of housing is increasing all over the world. So they also want to help you live a better life by providing more affordable furniture or furnishings.
Yeah, I guess what they're saying here is like, well, I mean, this will be clear to basically all of our listeners. House prices are expensive.
Yes.
But house prices aren't only expensive because you have to pay for the house.
That's
true. It's
like
there's a lot of other things that come with home ownership or having a home of your own. Like furniture.
Yes.
So they're kind of helping out by keeping prices low.
Yes.
A noble goal.
A noble goal. Because if people are spending more time buying their apartments, then they probably don't have too much money left over for fancy furniture.
Well,
right?
And the classic North American stereotype is we say people buy too much house, which means they spend all their money on buying the house and then they can't afford to maintain it or buy furniture for the house because all the money's gone by. So they have like a giant empty house.
Right. But in terms of if you treat buying a house as an investment, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, because then you just buy
a very nice house with IKEA furniture.
Yeah, as long as you can maintain it.
Yes.
Because that's an ongoing cost too, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, Simon, let's continue to talk about. Well, IKEA faces a lot of challenges in maintaining low cost.
Yeah. I mean,
they've made low cost their priority, and it's their competitive advantage. But it's really hard right now to operate with low cost and still be in all these different markets globally.
Yeah.
So, Simon, what are some of the global challenges right now?
Well, the one that is, you know, labeled in bold italics here is the word tariff, which has become famous. It's kind of a tax on goods as they move from one country to another. That's the idea. And I suppose the problem is like if you have an IKEA in one country, you're not going to make all of the things for that IKEA in the country. So you're going to be like importing things from other parts of the world to all the other IKEAs, right?
Yes.
And the problem then is if there is this tariff imposed on it, it means the price of the same product can be vastly different in different IKEA stores in different places.
Yes. And the price will definitely go up because once you slap a tariff on the imports coming in, then that price will go up. It could go up by 10%, go by 15%, 20%. It will definitely go up. And of course, IKEA, they're not going to suffer a greater loss because of tariff. They're just going to pass it to the consumer. So we, the consumers, we have to pay higher prices when we're buying those products. So tariffs are a big one, especially, I guess, right now under the present Trump administration in the U.S., where he's using tariffs as a big part of his economic policy. We will see tariffs for a while to come. And then we also have another big word here. Well, we talk about currencies. Of course, currencies can go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have geopolitics.
Yeah,
now, this is a word we often talk about, like on the news.
Yeah, it just means world politics.
Yes. Right?
So you have your national politics.
We have the geo in the geopolitics. So geo is geography, right?
Yeah.
It's talking about where you're located. Yeah. So geopolitics.
Geo means world. Like geography means earth writing.
Yes. So it means like where you are in the world, like yeah. where, like your position or geography, where you are in the world. That will determine a lot the politics, like your trade. It'll determine a lot how you interact with other countries just mm-hmm. by where you're located in the world, right? So that's why we have the geo in front of the politics. Where you're located is really, really important right now in so many different dimensions, like whether it's security. It's talking about how important your country, like what threats you face from neighbors, or the geopolitics is really, really important.
Yeah.
And then we go on to talk about what we talked about in the beginning of today is we need to learn as a company, how do we build resilience to keep navigating the circumstances? There's two words I really like here. First, we have navigating. So to navigate, I think of like a ship or a boat, like you're trying to navigate or you're trying to steer that boat through some, like through whatever circumstances that might arise. Maybe a storm arises, you still have to steer that boat. Maybe you see an iceberg in the distance, then you have to steer clear of that iceberg. So you have to navigate. You got to steer yourself. You got to move in the right direction through difficult circumstances. And then we have the word again, resilience. Like, how do you stay strong in spite of all of these challenges that come?
Yeah.
And then so here, the end of this interview of the CEO says, for us, the long term is to build the resilience that can keep us in the low price agenda. So basically, they want to be resilient. And their goal is to have low costs so that they can keep offering consumers low price products.
Yay.
Yeah, well, good for consumers, right? As prices go up.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that we can still rely on IKEA to give us low prices.
Yes.
And on that note, we have to end today's article. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Simon.
We hope you'll join us very soon for another article. Have a wonderful day.
Bye.